Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Bob Breeze, the outgoing Energy Department Chief Information Officer. Bob, great to do an exit interview with you. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Well, thanks for making time. It's not always that you get a chance to do a real exit interview before you walk out the door.
Knowing that your last day is September 5th, we'd like to get a little ahead of the curve, make sure we catch up with what's going on with you, which leads us right into our first question. Is your last day is this Friday, September 5th. Why did you decide that was the time to leave government?
Well, I think it really was a confluence of events. One is I've had the privilege of being at Energy now for 11 and a half years, and that coupled with 22 years in the Navy, you know, pushed me over 30, and it was kind of like, what do I want to do for another 10-year chunk of my life? But I think mostly it was that we had gotten some really critical decisions and some accomplishments completed here as we were winding down the summer, and the full executive team's in place. It's a convenient time to hand things off. And, you know, I'm comfortable. I'm comfortable with what I've gotten accomplished. And the next chunk of things are going to take a couple of years and the right team's here to hand that off to. So that's what made the time right.
That rarely happens that you talk to a CIO who kind of hits a certain mark in their career and say, you know, I feel good about where we're at. Did you know that that was going to hit at this point? Or did you kind of wake up a few months ago and say, look, we're going to meet my goals. Maybe it's a good time for me to think about my next part of my career.
Well, I've had bosses who have said, you know, how long will you be here? And I always say, you know, till the next better offer comes along. And some of it's just luck. I mean, you know, I had a couple of offers over the summer. I delayed on those in order to nail down some of these decisions. And it just came to fruition. I mean, some of it is just plain blind luck.
Well, you know, it's nice when things do work out the way you wanted them to, because nobody ever wants to leave when you feel like things aren't completed. So that leads us to the next question of what happens next. Where do you go next? Can you tell us yet?
Well, I'll tell you, it's in the private sector. I'll be based in the D.C. area. My guess is this isn't the last time you'll hear from me, but I'm going to refrain from giving you the specifics until after I'm on the other side of the door.
Fair enough. We always like to know where people are going, so it gives me another reason to talk to you in a week or two or three. Are you starting right away at your new job? Or are you going to take some time off? Are you going to relax a little? Because obviously people have to understand that the CIO's job is not 5 days a week, 40 hours a week. It's more like 6.5 days a week, probably 80 hours a week.
I am a nuclear engineer from the Navy, so we don't do very well with time off. We love to be driving and accomplishing things. So I'm officially still an employee this Saturday. I'll take Sunday off, and Monday morning I'll report to my new job.
All right, so now I know when to touch base with you Monday morning around 9 a.m., maybe 10 to give you a little time to get your coffee and get the new employee orientation done.
That's right. I will tell you, I am really excited for this new opportunity. I'm excited to leave this in the hands of my team and here at DOE. So life is good.
Well, very nice. Let's talk a little bit about government, your career. As you said, about 22 years in the Navy, 11 and a half years at Department of Energy, you know, 33, almost 34 years total. Talk about what you'll miss about government the most.
Well, I think what I'll miss most about government is the mission. Coming up in the military, that sense of mission, that commitment to, you know, that oath to protect and defend the Constitution, you know, to do great things for the citizens. That's the one thing I will miss is every day doing something that makes this country a little bit better.
That's interesting that you kind of put it that way, because I think a lot of people would say, you know, I'll miss the people, or I'll miss kind of that sense of purpose that you have. You kind of broaden that out. You know, from the Energy Department perspective, as a CIO perspective, is there other things that you'll just say, you'll look back and say, well, that was the best part of my job as a CIO?
I think Energy has one of the coolest missions in government, and, you know, not to deride my colleagues and peers around the other departments and agencies, but I wouldn't trade my job for theirs. I mean, the national labs and the plants and the folks we get to work with are so cool. Things like getting to play around, you know, in response to Sandy and all of the things we did to bring innovation to returning citizen services in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy, and the coordination and the collaboration with FEMA and the rest of Homeland Security and, you know, the other departments was really a lot of fun. I mean, it was a terrible thing that led us to that, but we accomplished a lot. And I think the thing that about energy is whether it's fundamental science, basic science, whether it's applied energy and developing a new energy economy for this country, whether it's nuclear security and securing loose nuclear material, whether it's providing the strategic nuclear deterrent for this country, whether it's being ready to respond to nuclear terrorism. There's just such a great portfolio of things, and every one of them contributes somehow to the betterment of the country. And, you know, you say the people, I will definitely miss the people here. And I was out at the Renewable Energy Lab 2 weeks ago, and the folks out at the High Performance Computing and the Energy Infrastructure and the Energy Integration Systems Facility just talked about how we skip to work every day. We love coming here because every day we're making a difference. I mean, that sense of mission that I don't know if it's reproducible out in the private sector. I'll let you know. I'm sure it is. It's just the motivations are slightly different.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of people who leave government still enjoy what they do. They feel like they can still contribute, but it's just a different type of contribution that they do in the end, and especially if you're going to be ending up in the public sector community, you know, working with and for the government in some way or another. I think that it becomes a different sense of pride. A lot of things about government you probably won't miss. Give me a highlight from a CIO's perspective of some things that maybe you won't miss.
There are IT operations directors, and there are CIOs that enjoyed being IT operations directors. I didn't grow up in that world. I'm not a wires and boxes guy. I won't miss being responsible for my senior leader's BlackBerry and their laptop and being the personal call desk for you know, some of our most important customers. That stuff's important, and it's always a bummer when you don't deliver excellent service every minute of every day. I actually don't get kind of wound up too much about some of the cyber challenges. I mean, those are interesting challenges to respond to. You know, certainly we are pretty bummed when, we lose sensitive information or things like that. But I think just the ops. I think being free of ops will be a nice break.
I know when I talk to CIOs very often for my show, a lot of times I always ask about what kind of CIO are they? Are they operational or visionary strategy? And it seems, you know, over the years, people have leaned toward more strategy, more visionary. Obviously, that's the part you like the best. Were you able to, you know, in this role as CIO, create the job as you hope to?
Yeah, I think so. I think Secretary Chu and Secretary Moniz, and especially with the support of Deputy Secretary Poneman, have been very welcoming of me and my team, and how can we help get something really important done, whether it's how does energy respond to emergencies in the national infrastructure and the grid, whether it's how do we leverage big data and scientific analysis, how do we create a more open data environment. Those types of things are opportunities that me and my staff have been welcomed into, and I think it really freed us from being looked at as the BlackBerry team, you know, or the team that gives you email. Yes, they do that, but there's so much more. And there's nothing more gratifying to get a phone call that says, hey, the deputy secretary wants you up in his conference room. And you say, for what? And I say, he said, just, you know, get up here. And you show up, and there's a meeting on a particular, you know, programmatic issue. And the comment from the deputy is, now we can get started. The CIO's here. Because, you know, he knows that you're going to bring something of value, a different perspective that the other, you know, program officials and the direct reports may not have, because the CIO gets to pretty much see everything across the department.
Was that always that way when you got to energy, or was this something you had to kind of, I'll say, push for or show your value, and then you started getting included? How did that work?
I think it wasn't so much of pushing, but it wasn't immediately obvious. I think you have to look for opportunities. My entire career, even going back into, you know, times at the Pentagon, were, if I see a gap that I think that I can add value, then I'll stick my nose in it, you know, offer my opinion or my assistance. And I think people eventually say, hey, you know, we really want that individual in that person's office involved, because when we do engage them, they add value. And I think you have to do it in a non-threatening way. You know, I'm not interested in taking over science, energy, or nuclear security, but you know, I do want to make them better. You know, if you kind of go back to the old BASF commercials, you know, we don't make the products you use, we make the products you use better. That's kind of our motto. We hope to make your program better, but we're not interested in running your program.
I think that's actually excellent advice for any CIO, and that's one of the questions we're going to get to maybe a little later in the interview of what advice do you have to the next CIO. Let's take a quick break. My special guest today is Bob Breeze, the outgoing Energy Department Chief Information Officer. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Bob Breeze, the outgoing Energy Department CIO. Now, Bob, we started the conversation talking about your decision to leave, where you're going next, which we're still kind of waiting to hear more about from in a couple, you know, week or so. But let's talk about more broadly your career in government. I mean, as you said, about 34, almost 35 years in government. Talk about some professional highlights across your entire career, and then we'll talk more specifically about energy.
One is I wouldn't trade my time in the submarine force, the U.S. Navy, for anything. It was really, really hard, but boy, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, working with people that you essentially depended on each other for, you know, not only your mission accomplishments, but your actual life. And that was really, really rewarding. But I think that also really set the stage for some really cool things. You know, my first tour in the Pentagon back then in the mid-90s, submarines still were processing sonar information with large mainframes. And we put together a group with some experts from some of the applied physics and applied research labs, Johns Hopkins, Penn State, Texas, Washington, others. And we started doing parallel processing during actual submarine operations to look at how we could use commercial off-the-shelf processing techniques and hardware to do a better job and to give sonar operators better information on how to track enemy submarines and surface ships. And that was a little bit unheard of, but we didn't have any way to get the data and store it and bring it back to the lab. We just didn't have the technology. So we co-processed, we'd build algorithms, we'd get the operators to buy into them, we'd deploy a new algorithm on the next submarine operation, bring some more developers, and they would start working on the next iteration, and we called it build, test, build. And today it sounds a lot like modular or agile, but you know, back in the mid-90s, it was pretty incredible work, and it resulted in a $2 billion program to push COTS processing onto submarines and free up a lot of space or a lot of power and a lot of other things. So that was pretty cool. Later in my career at the Pentagon, another Pentagon tour, I had the opportunity to work on a lot of defense reform items. You know, that's when I first met Dave Winogrand and Rob Carey, and when Navy Marine Corps Internet was founded, and we worked with NAVAIR, Naval Air Systems Command, and pushed enterprise resource planning out across all the airframes, you know, working one module in each airframe so that we wouldn't try to push too hard on any one particular program line. We did a lot of privatization of things that the military didn't need to have a core expertise in anymore, like housing, things like that. And so we did a lot to really improve quality of life and reduce total ownership cost and those types of things. And then, you know, I think another rewarding tour in the military was as the executive officer of the submarine base in Groton, Connecticut. Wonderful tour. Thousands of men and women and dependents and retirees and the community that really relied on you. And big, challenging job, but just an immense amount of fun. And then, you know, the Navy brought me to the Department of Energy. And, you know, 11 and a half years ago, I showed up here in uniform to defense programs and just really got a lot of great opportunities to march my way through defense nuclear security and then over into the NNSA CIO's office and then finally ending up here. And I think some of the things we've accomplished in getting the national laboratories and all of our production plants and cleanup sites to really collaborate and to build a cohesive team, that was really important. I mean, it was not that collaborative, you know, a decade ago. But today, I think we're really working well together among the program offices and all the labs and the sites. And that stuff's just been great. And I think, you know, here at the end, we did a big study on our federal IT service delivery. We've got a good path forward to finally achieve some of our long-term goals in consolidation and cost savings and effectiveness improvements. We've got strong new governance in place. We've got good support from the secretary, the deputy, the undersecretaries. And every time you knock one of those things off, it's just really, really rewarding.
Let me just go back to your days in the Navy. and how you got to the Energy Department. Did you get detailed over to Energy, or was there always someone from the Navy who kind of worked collaboratively with the Energy Department?
So the department has, I don't know the number today, but probably 25 or 30 military officers stationed, you know, that are on detail to the Department of Energy for a 2 or 3 year tour. And they work in defense programs, on the weapons programs, in nonproliferation, in counterterrorism, in emergency operations, those types of things. And it was, you know, it was a billet that was open in defense programs, came over to kind of work on, you know, that program, and just kind of moseyed on through. You know, it was just kind of at the, you know, I got asked to do some things in nuclear physical security, and then was fortunate enough to retire into a position as a civilian and continue my career here for almost another 9 years as a civilian.
Interesting, because it's always fascinating how people end up where they end up, because I'm sure you didn't start your career out saying, I want to be a CIO. I can only guess that you just kind of happened into it kind of purposefully, if you will.
Yeah, I came out of college as a civil engineer of all things, a civil engineer and math major, ended up a nuclear engineer in the Navy, and walk out of federal government as a chief information officer. I will tell you that in 1988, 89, a senior chief torpedoman and I were shoving coax through stuffing tubes on the USS Frank Cable in Charleston, South Carolina, building the first 286-based Novell NetWare LAN on the USS Frank Cable because we were too lazy to walk 7 flights of stairs to go see our boss. So that was my foray into government IT. I mean, so, but as nukes, you know, Navy nukes, we're a pretty bright bunch. And, you know, we believe that we can become pretty darn good at anything in 6 weeks. I'll say it takes longer to be a good CIO than 6 weeks. It is a hard, hard job. And I have a lot of admiration for my colleagues and for all those who aspire to sit in this chair.
That's fascinating. I mean, 286, I think that was my first computer in college, too, right around that time. So fond memories of the old 286 and WordPerfect 5.1. Who loved that?
That's right.
All right. Well, that's a good time for a break. My special guest is the outgoing CIO of the Energy Department, Bob Breeze. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is the outgoing CIO at the Energy Department, Bob Breeze. You mentioned the federal IT study on service delivery. Just give me a little bit more about that, if you can, in terms of what did you find out, and how's that leading you down the path and the rest of your office down the path over the next, you know, 6 or 9 months or so?
Like most federal departments and agencies, DOE is highly federated. And so there are a lot of people that deliver IT services to their employees. And we really came to realize over the last couple of years, even without the push from OMB for consolidation and things like that, is that we really weren't being as effective as we needed to be in order to deliver on the mission. So there had been several fits and starts at this, and we finally, you know, in talking with Secretary Moniz when he came on board, and we went through a big study on human resources service delivery, and then we kicked off one on IT service delivery. And what we found over the course of about 5 months, as we disaggregated every service that we provide down into the dollars, into the quality of services, we really looked at three things. How much does all of this cost? Two is, how satisfied are our end users and the customers of these services? And three is, what's the maturity of all of these organizations that are delivering IT service, and who's positioned to do it best from an effectiveness, efficiency, and security perspective? What we found as we went through that is that our overall spending isn't really more than our peers when we, you know, look at industry benchmarks and things like that. But it was out of balance, or it is out of balance. I mean, we spend a lot more on people than we do actually on the technology. And so one of the efforts needs to be, how do we make better leverage of the actual technology and reduce our reliance on people? The other is, we found that a lot of our services scored really, really well from a customer service perspective. But then we had some that, you know, perform pretty poorly, that people were not happy with. And so there's some lessons learned there about, how do you trade off cost versus quality of customer service, you know? So that's another piece. And then the third major finding was that none of the organizations that are delivering IT today are capable of immediately assuming ownership and control of all the services and being able to deliver that back effectively and efficiently. So We are now building project plans to work through a large number of recommendations, over 25 recommendations, to begin to march through the centralization, the consolidation, or the enhanced federation of services. And so that's underway right now. We owe the Secretary a plan here at the end of this fiscal year on what we would consider some quick wins that we can knock out in the first half of fiscal year 15. And we're just going to kind of run through this. We're going to leverage some of the agile processes about biting off chunks that are valuable to us, that are doable, immediately visible, and that we can churn through. There are going to be things that are going to take another couple of years. And that's going back to your first question, why now? You know, we got the study done. We got the recommendations approved. We got the governance put in place to oversee it. But to really claim success is going to be another 2+ years. And I really felt that one of the things would be, if I was going to commit to another 3 or 4 months, is I really, my sense of service was I was going to need to commit for another 2+ years to really see the majority of this implementation come to fruition.
I know you said the plan still has to go to the Secretary, so you may not be able to talk too much about it, but are there any initial of those quick wins that you can talk to?
Well, I think, you know, wide area networking, email, video and audio conferencing, those types of things are still federated across our environment, and those are things that are relatively simple to bring under the management of a single office and deliver ubiquitously. So, you know, those are the types of things we'll march off on first. On the email may turn out to be, hey, let's get all of our active directories or that type of thing federated so that we can actually find each other. And then maybe it's a longer term thing to actually deliver email as a single integrated environment. I think, you know, that's what you kind of see in defense as well. I mean, there's been a number of efforts there to strengthen the federation and then finally to move to a single integrated email environment.
Do you have the same problem as DOD does, where if you want to send an email to someone at NSA, you can't just find them in your active directory? You have to actually know their email address, or at least know their first name and last name, that type of thing?
Yeah, NSA actually is easy to find. It's some of our other components that aren't so easy to find. But yeah, exactly. If you don't know their email address, then you got to make sure they're in your contact book already or find them separately. The other is really on collaboration, you know, instant messaging, the free or busy time in the calendar, presence, are you at your computer or at a device where I can reach you? Those types of things, the federation isn't strong enough to let us really collaborate as well as we need to.
All right. Well, you've just given the marching orders, I guess, to your next CIO. So very good. We'll have some plenty of time to follow up on. Let's talk a little bit about what you wish you would have spent more time working on as energy CIO. You talked a lot about your accomplishments. Is there anything that you said, wow, if I only had a few more months, or if I only would have spent more time on this, whatever that is, over the last, you know, 4 years or so?
As you mentioned, you know, I really like the strategic visionary things. I like the mission enablement, and I've spent a lot of my time on that, you know, moving big rocks around. While I don't get excited on a day-to-day basis about wires and boxes and, you know, delivering the highest quality email, I do think that there are things in our infrastructure and our data centers and some of our core IT services that, if I were to go back and redo this again, I would probably apply a little bit more, some measurable amount of time into that, because I think while I've accomplished a lot on the other things, is that I could have pushed our data centers and our core infrastructure and some of our services to even higher levels of quality and reliability than they are today. I think that's typical, you know, is you spend time on the things that are, one, urgent, and two, that you enjoy working with. And so I think those are the things I've done. And, you know, if I were to look back, maybe it wasn't so urgent and it wasn't the thing I really enjoyed the most, but it's probably the place where I could have spent a little more time.
And in many regards, it's also some of the hardest things to do, because when you've grown up like energy has, where it's a federated infrastructure and everyone's used to running their own thing, getting everyone to move in a direction, whether it's something simple as email or Active Directory, is not always an easy path. And it probably takes a, not that it takes a lot more effort than anything else, but it takes more time than people realize. And some are the, when you talk about urgency and things you enjoy working on, that's hard. And
yeah,
not that you stay, that you stay away from the hard stuff, but I think that's a natural thing. Looking forward of, you know, just again, looking over your 30+ year career, technology's changed a lot. I love the story that you told earlier in the show about the 286 and the coaxial cables that you're running. From your perspective, I mean, has technology in the IT and environment that obviously it's changed a huge amount over your career. Where do you see some of the biggest changes that really have impacted you or are going to impact your agency, the energy department?
The whole move to the cloud, which is still as far along as we think we are, I think cloud is still somewhat in its infancy, and there is a lot more to be gained there. I think the other is mobility. We are becoming less and less tied to a physical location and becoming more and more outcome centric. I think that that's probably, you know, another 5 to 7, 8 years away to where you'll kind of look back and go, wow, I can't even imagine when I had a desk and a desktop and dual monitors and all this stuff, or that I save stuff on my hard drive or on my network drive that lived in a data center in the basement of my building. I think those are going to be two of the big things. I think the other is just how the country and how the world reacts to the challenge of cybersecurity. And, you know, it's multispectral, everything from what are the threats, what are the inherent vulnerabilities in creating an ecosystem of technology that's designed to be interoperable, but also the whole civil rights and civil liberties and those types of things of how do we protect the people that are using these systems in a way that's consistent with, you know, the Constitution, but also with our need to provide security. And I think there's a lot of work still to be done there. It's not all about appliances and, you know, the next great firewall and things like that. Those things are important, but there's a lot of hard intellectual work that still needs to be done as to how we approach this problem more holistically. And it's not that we haven't been trying. It's just a freaking hard problem.
I want to go back to the cloud for a second, because one of the things about cloud that I find a little ironic is that they've tried over the years cloud before. It was called, you know, ASPs, alternative service providers. They've tried it as managed services. Now we have this new name, this cloud name. Why is it taking hold from your eyes today than versus, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago when we've had all these other attempts?
Back in, you know, if you go all the way back into the early 80s when I was in college and everything was essentially cloud in one way or another. I mean, there was a central computer, and all you had was a display terminal, a remote display terminal that you worked off of. You know, it was done that way because you couldn't push compute to the edge, and it had to be held in this big central core. Over time, as computing became available to the average human being, and we grew up through the desktop and the laptop and now the tablet and the smartphone environment, is, you know, all this stuff got pushed to the edge, but now there are so many things that we're connected to and that we want access to that there's an opportunity for us to take advantage of this highly connected and networked world and the multitude of things. While we carry the compute power around with us, we don't necessarily have to carry the physical service or the physical data with us. We can just access it when we need it. So 30 years ago, security resided in the data center, and then it became, now security's out on the edge. Now, I think we're going to see security going back to the data and to the data center. We're going to work harder at creating self-protecting data. We're going to work harder at creating, you know, software-defined data centers that we can manipulate and adjust and tweak as we need to, as the threats evolve and as the vulnerabilities become evident. And we'll be able to deliver those services and the data to people on the device of their choosing, whether it's a phone, a tablet, laptop, ultrabook, whatever, you know, the smart watch, smart pendant, all that, smart shoe. I'm sure I'll be reading stuff on my shoe tips here in another, you know, 2 weeks. But, you know, I think that's just where it's going. I think it's just been the cycle of technology the way it's happened. I doubt anybody 30 years ago said, I think we should push compute to the edge and then pull the data and the strength and the security back to the data center in 30 years.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, because a lot of it was so much a client server. You know, you could have all the data you want right there at your fingertips, and you still can, but you're right. I think it's going back. It's all about the data, and it's been that way for, I think, the last decade or so. Do you remember looking back over your career and wondering if there were certain technologies that would take off and they didn't? Anything that stood out to you as, you know, at the time you said, wow, this is the next big thing, and it kind of fizzled on its own?
Well, I think things have fizzled, but maybe it's the product that fizzled and not the idea. I mean, if you go back to, you know, the old Palm Treos and, you know, having your personal digital assistant, that was really cool, but you had to dock the silly thing, and, you know, that seemed convenient at the time. No one would walk around with a PDA that they didn't have to, that required docking all the time. And I think the improvements in networking and wireless and things like that have really enabled that to change. So, you know, things like the PDA didn't fail because they were bad ideas. All of that capability has now been absorbed into your phone, which is now connected. I mean, look back at, you know, when, well, at least when I was in high school, you know, and we had 300 baud acoustic modems. Can you imagine having to suffer through even downloading a 1 kilobyte, you know, logo on a 300 baud modem these days?
Well, you hear the sound once in a while of the old dial-up modem, the 512, and you just go, oh, I remember that. And it almost gives you that fond memory now. And in a sense, it's, you couldn't imagine doing, you know, 80, 90% of what we do now through that way. But that was, you know, I used to play video games that way. You used to get on the internet that way. That was, and you wouldn't stay hooked up forever. You'd only hook up for the time you needed it, then you'd get off. And now it's ubiquitous, you know, always access to the web.
Yeah. You know, I think companies and products have failed, but more that they've been overcome by the next thing. But a lot of the ideas that were born back in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s are still around today. I mean, you know, bulletin boards, you know, that we used to log on to and read news. I mean, now we read Google News or Microsoft News or something else.
Well, that's a good time for a break. My special guest is the outgoing CIO of the Energy Department, Bob Breeze. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Here's Todd Meyer, senior architect at the NG.
Welcome back. You're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is the outgoing CIO at the Energy Department, Bob Breeze. You talked a little bit about the technologies such as cloud, mobility, and even cyber, how those things are kind of changing the way the government. Is there anything else that's coming next down in your vision that's really going to have a big impact on the government in, you know, in the next 5 or 10 years?
I think it's going to be somewhere in the collaboration tools. As we become more and more comfortable with work-focused collaboration, whether it be chat and messaging, whether it be, you know, FaceTiming and video conferencing, those types of things. I think that's what's really going to be the next, I don't want to say the next big thing, but it's almost more of a cultural thing than it is a technology thing. I mean, the technology is there, but my guess is if you were to survey government employees, that they're way more social, whether it's Facebook, instant messaging, FaceTiming, other video, you know, phone-based video, Skype, those things. They're much more social and collaborative away from work. And when they come to work, they take all those things that make them happy and successful in their personal, social, community lives. And they put them to bed and they come here and they sit down with their email, maybe a phone, or they have meetings. And I think that transition of the things that make us happy and successful in our personal lives is still going to need time to migrate through our work life.
I think that's a great point in many regards, because you've seen that with email, you've seen that with the phone. I mean, you and I probably aren't quite old enough to remember this, but I've heard stories about, you know, there's one phone in the office that everyone, you know, back in the 70s and 60s when phone systems, you know, really got put in, there was one and you could use it. And to dial long distance, you had to get special permission to do it. And then all of a sudden there was a phone on every desk. And then when the PCs came out, the same thing happened. Well, why would you need a PC on every desk? Can't you just have one for the office? And then all of a sudden there was these, you know, the Wang computers on every desk. And you saw that grow as it became part of your everyday life, that you demanded it at work. And I think the same thing, that's the point I think you're trying to make here, is that you're going to demand it, you're going to expect it. And it's not an age issue, it's just a part of that culture change. I mean, are you able to start to force that culture, if you will, change that energy, or are you starting to see it now?
Well, I think we're starting to see it, but I don't know about forcing it. You know, obviously we do things like telework and we do video conferencing and things like that, but I still think 51% or more of our employees are more comfortable on a phone. It might be a cell phone, but on a phone, on email, or in a meeting than they are doing business through these more collaborative, open communication type things. I don't know about forcing it. Maybe it'll just take a generational change. Maybe all the folks my age will have to just move on.
No, don't say that. I mean, you know, it's always hard when people move on from government. So, you know, you can't have everyone go out at the once out
no,
the door.
No.
We're almost out of time. Before I let you go, I did want to talk a couple more things. One thing about is the CIO role, more generally speaking. How has it changed in your eyes over the last, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, and where should it go next?
Well, I think that in the 4 years I've been in the CIO's office, about 18 months as deputy CIO, and now, you know, almost 2.5 years as a CIO, is I think across the federal CIOs, you're seeing all of us become more focused on some of the strategic issues and how do we leverage technology to enable the mission, where 4 years ago we were, I think, probably more focused on how do we deliver more efficient commodity IT. I think CIOs do need to remember that as chief information officers and, you know, owning the chief information security officer role for the most part, you know, in our offices, the chief technology officer role in our offices, perhaps chief data officer and others, is that we're still a technical advisor. And while it's great to become, you know, a strategic advisor to your secretary, your undersecretaries and others, is that that advisory capability, that advisory capacity has to be founded in strong technical capability of your team. If you're not a really strong technologist, but you're a good technical manager, that's okay. But in the end, it's about providing advice on how to leverage data, information, and technology to deliver on your department or agency's mission. If you lose that and you just end up as a strategic advisor, then you're really kind of like in the special assistant role, and you've lost what really made you powerful as a really great department or agency CIO.
You bring up chief data officer. I saw a report that you guys are looking to hire one. I know that's something maybe you've started, but somebody else will finish up. Talk a little bit about that decision to bring on a chief data officer at Energy.
I think two things. One is we have tons and tons and tons of data. If you could weigh it, I'm sure it would be tons. And as a scientific R&D department, primarily, we have generated a lot of data over the last 70 years. A lot of that needs to be freed up and made available. As you see all of the amazing things that people are doing with data in their open source development, we have things that have not been made available to the public and then to the private sector yet. The other is that, you know, with all of this data, we don't always put it to best use in making decisions about what we should be doing or how to move forward in particular areas. So, you know, whether it's, you know, data that's been developed in one energy program that might be of use to another, making that discoverable and available to other people across the department is really important. Secretary Moniz, when he came on board, started us through a number of cross-cutting initiatives where he would ask us to look at specific areas and say, who all is doing work in this area that he said, hey, this is a critical competency of the Department of Energy, but we have numerous program offices working on it, and it may not be tightly integrated and connected as we march forward. And so we're not getting the full value out of the work that we could if we were more tightly integrated. Data is a key component of that. And so one of the things that we want to do with this data officer is begin to not only understand our inventory, but to begin to create data and build information products with a purpose. We have a great organization, the Energy Information Administration, that has been an incredible partner with Open Data and in our pursuit of getting approval to go out and hire a data officer, and they've got a lot of experience in turning data into information that we're going to be able to leverage across the department. But it's really about, hey, we're creating it, so let's put it to its maximum potential use.
Very good. I think that's something that's a growing trend we're seeing across a lot of agencies looking at that CDO. All right, last question of the day here. The last one is Energy Department CIO. Eventually, a new CIO will be named at the Energy Department. They're going to call you up and ask you about the job. Should they take it? Should they not take it? What do they need to know? Give me a sense. What kind of advice would you give that next Energy Department CIO?
One, I would say that, again, not to disparage my peers, but I still think the Energy CIO is the best CIO job in government. So, whoever gets offered the job, I would say take it. That'd be advice one. Advice two is we have an incredible amount of talent out in our national laboratories, production plants, cleanup sites, and in our program offices. This is a team sport, and One of the things that the new CIO, in my mind, has to continue in order to be successful is to keep those people engaged in the fight, in the discussion, and in the development of solutions that will define the future of the department. The lab and plant cleanup site CIOs are amazing men and women that are doing amazing things individually at their own sites and collectively. It's pretty cool to get together and hear what's going on. And so I think that collaborative nature's got to continue. I think the third piece of advice that I would give is don't be shy. You know, bold ideas are difficult to get buy-in on in any department or agency. They're hard to sell. It's tough to compete against the core mission of the department. But don't be shy about having a bold idea of helping the department realize a key important future item. And for energy, you know, that's the clean energy economy. It's in, you know, reducing the threat of nuclear terrorism, and it's creating the scientific foundation for, you know, our future, you know, economic security and you know, the benefit of the citizens. So don't be shy.
All right. I think all three of those are good advice for any CIO, whether they come to energy or no matter where they go. Bob Brees is the outgoing Energy Department CIO. Bob, thank you so much for taking the time to come on my show one last time.
All right. Thank you, Jason, and all the best. And I'm sure our paths will cross again.
We will see you on the other side. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website. Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.